Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
We're going to talk preservation this morning, historic preservation in the area, and the historic Fredericksburg Foundation, to be specific. Danae Peckler is here, a preservationist with HFFI. Danae, it's great to meet you. Good morning.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having me, Ted. This is going to be great.
This is great. I said to you, you fill in a gap for me, because just in talking about various things with history in the area, you're going to be a great resource in the days and the years ahead. How does someone become a preservationist?
Oh, it's a good question. So historic preservation in general is a very broad term, and it covers actually a lot of different disciplines. So the federal government set up a framework for dealing with historic preservation in the 60s, and actually the SOI, that's called the Secretary of the Interior, sets these standards and these qualifications that tell us, well, what is, you know, a preservationist, or what is a historic architect or a historic engineer? And actually, to be a preservationist, you can come from any number of fields of study, history, art history, architecture, structural engineering. We get in people for cultural studies. So it's a wide, diverse array. Yeah. But for my personal journey, I actually came at it from my undergraduate. I loved history, always had. My mother dragged me to 1,000 different historic sites, including Jamestown a number of times. And, you know, and she still actually brings small children. I'm from Central Kentucky originally. And she actually still, in fifth grade, she was a teacher, and she had brought all of her fifth grade class over to hit Monticello. And then they went on down to Colonial Williamsburg, and they did the whole shebang to really help these kids understand American history. And so she's always been dedicated. And I will say, at first I thought, ugh, history. And then I really found out how much I enjoyed learning more about it, because it helped me make sense of now. I think that I really wanted to look back to understand, you know, how is our country like this? How did our places evolve? And who were the people, events, places, and spaces that shaped, how we exist today? So it's always been a really exciting thing and intellectually stimulating for me. But after my history undergrad, I discovered that the University of Kentucky had a graduate program in historic preservation specifically. And I started dabbling a little bit in that. And my parents said, well, what is historic preservation? And I said, well, you know, it's going from reading about individuals and events to the places and spaces where it happened, and making sure that those places and spaces still continue to enrich our lives and tell those stories. So
it's interesting they asked that, because that is true. I mean, because I can remember, and I loved history too. And back then, history really was, it's fascinating to me to see how history is told now with stories, and how it's so personal, and it's not just the dates and the here and now. And I had never heard of preservation until I came to Fredericksburg.
Yeah, it's really been an epicenter of preservation, actually. I will say, as I've been, we moved here in 2009, and it certainly took me a little while to get some of an understanding of what's happened here. But no, we are a very fortunate city. We've actually been really leading the nation in preservation at times. In the 1960s, we started looking at our historic colonial architecture, of course, as the preservation movement is galvanizing. But before that, in 1891, right, local citizens saved Mary Washington's house from going to the World's Fair. You know, we cared about our places. Certainly in the 20s, we are preserving places like Kenmore and Chatham. What would this place be without some of these beautiful, amazing, large spaces? But you're right. It's transitioned in a way where we started out caring a lot more about the big, the grand, the impressive, and now we're really expanding more to the common history, because, of course, that's important too. The term vernacular, I know, is used, you know, by Mark Twain and others to talk about common language, but we use it for the same way in architecture, that it's also the smaller common spaces that are meaningful and certainly make our distinct town unique. We also have the first undergraduate program in historic preservation in the country, because people cared so much about history in this place. I know the bicentennial in 1976, I see those pictures on Facebook of the parades and the things that were in town. You know, everybody here has really, they've been so invested in it, and that's just such a wonderful thing that makes Fredericksburg that much more special. So.
The UMW program is just stands out, and the people that have come from that, just the people that have that stay around here, I'm sure there are people all across the country.
All over the country, you're
but
right.
But here it's just amazing to see just the connection that people have the Mary Washington connection.
You're exactly right. I think the program is officially starting in 1984, but there were classes that were kind of geared in that direction, again, that multiple disciplinary approach. So, and even in the program now, you know, they have archaeologists, urban planners, museum professionals, and then architectural historians, documentations, and conservation of materials, people who specialize in that too, like my husband, actually, Michael Spencer. So, and you're right. It is a small-knit community. It's amazing to me to hear even the Elder Study program is still rocking and going for historic preservation initiatives, because a lot of the people who are leading that actually took those classes as well. So it really is, it still is a standout program for the university and has continued to pull in high numbers and draws people from out of state just to come study here. So it really is something to be proud of. 40 years, I think. Yeah.
Well, and you've taught me something already this morning in thinking about this, because in thinking about the Mary Washington program, I mean, you think of people. There are people with the National Park Service that came from there, and in all the other disciplines, like you say, this isn't just one. It's not just archaeology, or not just the National Park Service, or you know, architecture, all that kind of stuff.
That's right. And public history as well. There's an oral history program is a part of preservation, documenting, preserving, and enriching, the environment we live in with the stories that made it, shape it, and hopefully continue to keep it going is rewarding in lots of ways. And I think it does really make connections in the community that are lasting. So any university brings people to stay, but Fredericksburg is so unique and engaging that, you know, people do stick around.
Well, and it also shows that whether you're a parent or a grandparent, or you know, dragging kids around to these sites, who knows?
Yeah,
where it leads,
right? My daughter loves the I think, you know, and as everybody does, the leeches at Humorous. So these are part of like almost like a rite of passage when you come into town. You have to go to the Rising Sun Tavern. You have to head over to Ferry Farm. You know, these places really do animate. I think one of the city goals was to be animated by our sense of history, and I think that is something that's very true here.
One of the in fact the first. Back in the 80s, one of the first places I ever went to, historic places, was the Rising Sun Tavern. And I wasn't ready for that. I mean, I was used to just coming in, looking around, and leaving, and to be greeted like you're a guest there.
That's right. By people who are dressed up and really give you a sense of that history, right? It's hard. There's a great book, actually, that's called The Past is a Foreign Country. And the idea is that it is something of an exotic trip to go back. In time, and to think about how people lived. You know, our lives are changing so fast with new technologies, and of course our ability to move and shape lands and build things so quickly that that oftentimes it is grounding that sense of the fact that we're all humans who have just continued to persist and live in the same place in many cases. So I can't believe Fredericksburg's coming up on its 300th anniversary, actually. That's just a few years away. So we have really, you know, people have been occupying, and of course the indigenous before that, and occupying the space, and what we can learn from them really, again, kind of helps us, I think, at least makes me feel that I'm a part of something bigger than just the current day-to-day that can be the doldrum, you know, the beat. But we really are a steward of the environment and the history that shaped us.
Good stuff this morning with Danae Peckler with the Historic Fredericksburg Foundation. Quick break. We'll continue on this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Danae Peckler here this morning from Historic Fredericksburg Foundation, hffi.org, to find out more about the great work they do, and we'll talk about how you can get involved with HFFI in the area. So, it sounds like, Danae, that as far as historic preservation goes, boy, it's a big topic to say we're going to talk about historic preservation. It goes way more than just, well, we're going to save a building or a piece of land here. There's a lot of layers to this.
Most definitely. Yeah, historic preservation, as I said, is a kind of a broad disciplinary approach, but really, in real life, what does it mean? We encounter older and historic spaces every day. We may work in an older building. You may live in an older home. You may go to the same library. Of course, we have a wonderful library here that used to be that used to be the school, right? So there's all these ways that in our daily life, the built environment, as we like to say, plays a role. And preservation in and of itself is, it can describe describe the actual physical, tangible act of saving something. As I mentioned, actually, Michael, if anybody wants to drive by the kitchen at Mary Washington House, my husband's out there scraping and preparing to paint that wonderful kitchen behind Mary's abode. So it's
on a day like this, that is commitment right? to what you believe
yeah,
in.
Yeah, it's the fixing, it's the maintaining, it's being handy, it's creating and implementing like policies that help us conserve and revitalize these wonderful older spaces that are naturally, you know, our historic core downtown, the built environment is naturally dense. Our lots are smaller, you know, it's also affordable housing in lots of ways because these places tend to be smaller and therefore they cost less. They're kind of quirky. And so sometimes the rent is cheaper. You know, they're a great startup place for small businesses. They certainly attract, as we know, our downtown is an attractor for everybody in the region.
Yeah.
Visitors from in and around repeatedly come down to engage in this wonderful, diverse, and unique environment we have. It's researching and recognizing and identifying places that matter. And I know we talked about the bigger spaces that initially drew preservation and moving now into the more common places because it really is, it affects our neighborhoods, our distinct and wonderful neighborhoods here in town. It's also being able to address, like I said, affordable housing. It's also very environmental. And in the rest of the world, we actually call historic preservation is called heritage conservation. But the idea is the same. It's conserving our resources. And our built environment is indeed a resource. And the materials that are used in our historic structures tend to be natural. They break down. They are also renewable. You can get more wood, you know.
Yeah.
Bricks eventually break down. I kind of joke there's a whole industry out there that wants to make money off of you and would love you to buy new all the time. And at what is Lowe's is to never stop improving, right? Keep coming back out and spending that money. But environmental sustainability is actually repairing, not replacing. It is maintaining, right? So the idea, and actually I think I spent $13 repairing my historic wood windows in my home because I just went and bought a can or a thing of DAP for putty, glazing putty.
Yeah.
And if you got paint and a little bit of elbow grease, you can actually maintain your windows just fine. And they have actually been studies that show they are environmentally, you can put storm windows on them and make them just as airtight as your new windows that, of course, have a warranty and then break. And when they break, you have to pay the installer to come back out and do it. You know, you think about these things that if you're willing to get your hands dirty and try a little bit, you know, and I'm certainly happier to accept my own and my husband's mistakes than I am someone I paid to make mistakes, right? So it's environmentally sustainable. It really does keep building materials out of our landfills. And our landfills have something like 25 to 30% construction debris. And if you think about, I mean, the Freelance Star building that was torn down, of course, we have this new publisher hotel that is beautiful. But I think about the concrete blocks and the things that are in the landfill now that won't break down for quite some time. And of course, there's also some toxic environments that you think about. Asbestos at once was a great material, but then we learned. So saving what we have, conserving what we have, making use of it is really an important part for me as well because I'm an environmentalist. That's actually probably what drew me more to preservation or helps me stick with it as well as the idea that we're just conserving the built environment and the resources that we have. So that's another good one. And then, of course, preservation is also factors into local planning. It's just one of many tools that we have in terms of policy-wise that can help us, you know, shape our environment and preserve what matters, what's meaningful to people. So it really is a broad, big window. And I know certain people, everybody in town at one point or another has probably, you know, like I said, given some of their lifeblood to HFFI or historic preservation in the sense if you volunteered for the candlelight tour, those are events that take 300 plus people to pull off, you know, for the most part when we and everybody's, we've been around since 1955. So there's just been a lot of engagement.
55.
That's right. I know we're coming up on another anniversary here before too long, but we were established by a group of people who were alarmed at, you know, demolitions. Of course, the preservation movement really got going when the interstates were being built and people were seeing these whole communities and wide swaths being torn down. But in 1955, the kitchen outbuilding behind what the National Bank that is now Foodie was going to be demolished for the drive-through that was added onto the back of the bank. And this made a few people a little upset, particularly a little lady called Lillian Reed, who moved to Fredericksburg after she had read great stories about our colonial history. And she actually, so it got demolished. She bought back the bricks and then had it rebuilt. So you may be familiar with the two-story brick building at the corner of Emancipation Highway and Princess Anne that welcomes you when you cross the Falmouth Bridge.
Yeah.
That is the outbuilding, the kitchen outbuilding where John Washington worked and other enslaved laborers were active behind the bank for many, many many years, and now it was our visitor center at one point, but it still stands tall. So
I didn't know that.
I know. It's just, you know, it's amazing. Outbuildings aren't always thought. You know, we think of the big house or something like this. And of course, I can't find an outhouse here in town. That has not happened yet. But
yeah.
they once dotted everywhere. But something so common, again, vernacular, something common and utilitarian to an extent, but valuable nonetheless for a multitude of reasons. So preservation and HFI have been partners for many years. We actually have been around so long, we helped establish the Central Rappahannock Heritage Center because, of course, they have the specialty to be able to preserve these the papers, the maps, these things that need, you know, special environments and particularly archival conservationists.
Pictures, some of the pictures they have.
I know. Isn't it such a wonderful resource?
Yes.
Yes. And then Fredericksburg Area Museum, actually, HFI helped start that as well to help conserve the tangible physical items, again, that need kind of some special attention. HFI as an organization is still around to primarily promote the saving of the built environment and our cultural historic resources. So to preserve, protect, revitalize, that's our mission. So anyway, doing our best to advocate for the community as a whole. You know,
it's interesting that you're still needed. You think back, if the founders in 1955, they came back and looked at things, you're still fighting the same, you're still fighting the exact same battles.
You're right.
In neighborhoods and sometimes in little small spots here and there.
Right. And, you know, I think at one point I had read that it's the places we save that truly reflect what we are and what we care about, right, our values. And of course, the places we've lost leave scars. I mean, everybody can talk about something that, you know, they remember on the landscape that's gone now that they really wish or talk about. And it's nice to have the pictures and the documentation, but it just makes it more meaningful when you can actually still walk by, you know, or go to Mary Washington's campus and look at this great campus you remembered when you stayed in this dorm or when you met at this space that I know a lot of universities, the particular one that I went to, was really active in demolishing. A lot of these buildings were brand new, blah, blah, blah. And it's just not the same when you go back to that experience. And it doesn't make you feel as connected as it does as something that's familiar and comfortable, almost like comfort food. But the lots of better benefits are bigger benefits than that. So we're definitely needed. Everywhere needs to be saved constantly. Maintenance is a thing, you know, no matter if you're in a new construction or old construction. And both are expensive. It's a major investment that we make in our built environment, and our homes are often some of the most valuable resources that that we have. You know, so preserving, protecting, and maintaining the character of this place is really something that HFI is dedicated to. Yeah.
And it seems like you don't only talk about it; you live it. You mentioned your house and using, you know, Dapper. And so it sounds like you're in a historic home.
That's right. That's right. I mean, you know, it has, I think a lot of younger people are also very drawn to these places that have been around a long time. It makes you feel like you're a part of something bigger than what you are. But I mean, it really makes it unique to be able to, like I said, care for a house where I know that the weatherboard has been there since 1924.
Yeah.
And we had replaced our pressed metal shingle roof, but we found some company that still does the same type and the same pattern. And it was so worth it, in all honesty. We actually, first off, got an energy conservation tax credit because it had a reflective, they call it emissivity. So that was a nice little bonus. But when I did the cost analysis, it was about the price of what would have been two asphalt shingle roofs, but it's timed to last 100 years if we take care of it properly. So it's also about long-term thinking where, again, like I like to look at materials by life cycle analysis. I think it's a very good way. So we have a lot of slate roofs in town that are, some of them are nearing the end of their lifespan, but these are 200-year roofs. And we actually have Buckingham slate just further south of Virginia, is one of the highest rated quality slates in the world. So the fact that this resource was so handy to people who are here, and that when they built buildings 200 years ago, they built them to last that long. And nowadays, you know, I think the general rule for new home building is if it can last 15 years, it's great. And that's, you know, it's a waste. Well, I'm sorry. In my humble and personal opinion, I think that it's not long-term thinking when it comes to, you know, building an environment for our children that is quality.
When you talk about a 100-year roof, because I was just going to say, I'm at least on my third roof and, you know, maybe my fourth.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. It's about 15 years.
Yeah. And with our derechos and the more windstorms that we've actually been having, the asphalt shingles won't hold up to the wind loads that we've been getting. So, I mean, again, it's and it's not that much more expensive. I believe Tom Smith, a good friend who I dearly miss, but he had told me the slate roof on his house was something like $40,000. And I know that that's a significant investment that some people can't make right away. There are some financial incentives that can help people do this. I'm not sure if Tom had used the Historic Tax Credit Project, but there is a federal tax credit and a state tax credit. And so if you are in a historic district or have been, let's say, officially recognized as historic, that's the government's framework. There's actually, the state has a 25% dollar-for-dollar credit for your expenses. So I know recently, if anyone had followed, there's a great blog for Bringing Back Sligo, that Italianate building right next to Dixon Park, and the Topaskis did a great job there, and they use the historic tax credits. And, you know, anyway, it helps offset that cost. It's one small thing. There's, you know, private property, unfortunately, even though we know some of it is really significant, there's not much help out there in order to maintain your own private property. So anyway, but there's a little bit, and that's what matters. The city also has a tax exemption. They call it a credit, but it is really more of an abatement program that we've had since the 80s. That's another moment where I didn't realize that it was so early. We were one of the first cities that had really passed these incentives to help support people conserve and maintain, you know, the character of their spaces. So we've been really active in all of that. And I think that, you know, it's engaging with it and actually saving it yourself also ties you a little bit more to it, you know, I think.
Yeah.
And doing it yourself, just that elbow grease really does pay off, because, like I said, you'll save a lot of money. As we know, construction's expensive, but just trying it. And it's amazing how much our natural materials are more forgivable. You know, I may have scraped up my wood window here and there and took out a chunk, or maybe had a good splinter, but, you know,
right,
it really was worth it in cost savings.
And if you're someone who's looking at a home and thinking about something like in the historic district and are thinking, I don't know if I want, you know, maybe, you know, stop in and talk to somebody, you or somebody at HFFI.
Most definitely. Yeah, we are certainly a resource for that. And we've been doing it, like I said, for a few decades.
Yeah.
And we make a point to try and stay on top of these materials. The Park Service has a lot of briefs and other things to help. But you're right. We also maintain lists of people who you can call. And certainly we're willing to point anyone to the teach yourself strategy. I think I was born with a how hard can it be gene. And I don't think I was the only one, you know. So I encourage people definitely to look at us. We have a whole website dedicated to maintaining your building with lots of links to different assets. And we also have a website describing the financial incentives, or a web page on our website. So definitely I encourage anybody to go check that out. And think about, I think it's another good thing, you know, educating yourself on what needs to be done is another way that you can talk to the contractor you hire or someone you're looking at to make sure that they understand, you know, what or that they have a good understanding of what you want to see achieved. Because yes, it is, it's another hassle. But like I said, nothing is really maintenance free. That's just a marketing gimmick. Right?
Yeah, exactly. HFFI.org for more information on the Historic Fredericksburg Foundation. Jay Peckler here this morning, a preservationist with HFFI. More on coming up. Much more to talk about. Good stuff this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It is 8:30.
From the Fredericksburg.today online news studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station focused on Fredericksburg. This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Great stuff this morning with the Historic Fredericksburg Foundation, HFFI.org. Danae Peckler's here, the preservationist with HFFI. And we'll talk, before we get out of here this morning, about how you can really get involved yourself personally and stay up to date on a lot of these things. It's so interesting, Danae, that when you think about it, of things can change so quickly. I mean, you just think, if you left this community 5 years ago and came back now on Amelia Street,
right,
you would not recognize what's... And
it's true.
And that's some of the things we talk about. Not that everything has to stay the same, but there, you know, you're looking at things in a... in a bigger picture.
Yeah, in a long-term perspective. You're exactly right. We decide what type of community we want to live in, and certainly what we want to leave future generations. And so a lot of historic preservation is really working with the bigger policies that help us shape our community. Yeah. And so it is a part of the planning framework, like any other tool in planning. You know, I know it for in the historic district. So the historic district is only 4% of our community. Of our 10 square miles, it's a very small place. And that's the only place where we have our architectural review board. And there are some, you know, the policies and procedures for going and navigating mm-hmm. change in our downtown core. But we have so many places that are actually recognized as historic. And of course, being surrounded by the Park Service on three different sides. You know, and I know when I came here, everybody had said, oh, the whole state of Virginia is a battlefield. But Fredericksburg is a really important mm-hmm. one. I'm actually over in Ireland on the side of a rugby pitch. And these guys ask me where I'm from. I say Fredericksburg. And they go, oh, yeah, Fredericksburg, the battle, the Civil War. You know, we are really well recognized. And familiar to people particularly. So we have a lot of places here that matter, and certainly we're going through our comp plan review right now, and preservation has always been a core value in our planning, city's planning components, and it does affect growth and development, and it will always be a constant in that, because mm-hmm. and it's important to do that, of course, because it is our sense of place. It is what makes us, you know, unique and diverse. And so keeping conscious of that as we grow and develop, preservation is certainly not anything to stop change. It is to help us navigate it. So it's kind of a way of going through things. But yeah, so it affects it. Transportation planning is involved, of course, whenever the federal government, that's actually what I used to work in. I was at Dovetail Cultural Resource Group for about 13 years. And I worked with archaeologists, and I'm an architectural historian and other historians. And essentially, before the federal government goes to do something, they consider their impact on the environment around it. And preservation is just one small component of that. They also looked at their impact to cultural historic resources, but air quality and noise quality and low income neighborhoods and public spaces. And so, you know, planning in and of itself, we've just, you know, it's something we choose to do, is to certainly consider what we have and decide whether, you know, what trade-offs we'll make as we expand and grow. So I've been really active on the blog. I've been writing a lot of local issues that we're juggling. And one of my recent blog, actually another article coming out in the front porch, is about Alum Spring Park that's undergoing master planning with the Parks and Rec. So it and Old Mill Park, actually, two of our most historic areas. Yeah. You know, Old Mill Park is the site where John Washington and other enslaves crossed the river. Yep. But I also didn't realize, because of its location along Route 1, it's also the route that the wagon trains for the Revolutionary War, when they were going down to Yorktown and coming back. This old roadway, of course, was also where they camped and moved on. So it's, you know, this place has so much history to it, and these places really can reflect that and do show that, if not above ground, then underground. So considering this as we take our steps into our comp plan and how we're going to pursue going forward with our 10 square miles of special Fredericksburg is something I think a lot of people are waking up more to engaging with, of course, our elected representatives and our staff, city staff, and planning.
And that's why, Danae, it's so important. I mean, when you talk about, I'm studying, I'm paying attention to the comprehensive plan. And a lot of people would just go, well, yawn. Yeah. But, you know, can anything be more boring? But as you talk about this, and you talk about an Alum Springs, or you talk about all of these places that mean so much to this area, in Fredericksburg's case, this whole comp plan discussion is really important.
It is. It guides. It really is. The comp plan really comes from the public, and it is how we want to change, shape, and determine our path forward here. And so, it looks, you know, it looks at epicenter at job growth, which, again, preservation plays a huge role mm-hmm. in having small businesses downtown, and a lot of startups happen in older buildings because, again, the rent is more affordable, the spaces are maybe a little bit more quirky. It also deals with environmental sustainable goals, of course, and playing into conservation of our natural and our built resources. Another big part of conservation of our comp plan is our distinct neighborhoods and preserving the character of our neighborhoods. And of course, I know a lot of neighborhoods are struggling with traffic and trying to preserve the character of their space, parking, all of these issues. But it's just one of many angles to consider. And I know during the small area plans, they are talking more about that as well. A lot of places have been talking about conservation districts, actually, a lot of these neighborhoods that are really looking at ways and tools with the planning staff that they can use to help, again, kind of guide growth. So it's really relevant, and I certainly encourage everyone, if they have not taken the comprehensive plan survey yet, the city has a webpage specifically for this rewrite, and there is a rather lengthy survey, but it is certainly designed to get thoughts and input, and so I encourage anyone who has not done that to go take a look at that and participate. That's the biggest thing. Let your people know that
there,
you care.
There are ways for you to get your voice out, and whether it's taking surveys and then going to some of these meetings.
Yes,
because I know there have been the small area plan meetings, but there have been the comprehensive plan meetings have just gotten underway.
That's right, and planning commission meetings. And I mean, you're right, it is a yawn to a certain extent, but I'm very grateful that we have so much on TV now, too, or on Facebook, where you can go back and watch these meetings. Mm-hmm. The city also has a great text alert system now that you can go and sign up for, and so you'll get the alert of the next agenda, and you can see when on, because, of course, our media is changing, you know, between the people who do or don't get the newspaper or do or don't follow, you know, certain things. So I think that new text alert system is really a great tool the city is using to engage the public in the conversation. So I would definitely encourage people to, yeah, if it matters to you and you want to be a part of the process, by all means, democracy is a great thing.
And to follow it as close as you can, because you don't want to wake up some morning and find out that something's going to change at Alum Springs, or something's going to change in a community, and that's why it's important to follow. And HFFI has been putting out things, and it's important to follow these kinds of things so you aren't surprised.
That's right. You want to be a part of the conversation before the decisions are already made. And sometimes I think a lot of people feel like the decisions have already been made, and then they're coming late to the game, which preservationists, and what do they call us? Hysterical preservationists. Lots of times we find ourselves reacting to something that is, oh, it's not brand new news, but it is, because it's just now being covered, or you're just now discovering it. But I do think that being regularly involved in the process is tedious for a lot of folks, but that's what HFI can certainly do to help, to let people know about at least the preservation related issues that we are seeing. And so, yes, Alum Springs Park is certainly one of ones that I'm talking about recently. I was also discussing the public health building that is going to be destroyed. But, you know, even when we lose resources, we still, at least in this day and age, have the ability to document them and certainly talk about them. Lots of times when you do lose a place, you know, having somewhere where you can store the memories about it. So I know that's what Central Rappahannock Heritage Center and also Fredericksburg Area Museum and HFI, through our oral histories, you know, even the places that are gone, it's still important to share and connect and talk about them. So, but yeah, no, I think the Alum Springs Master Park Planning, I think there's going to be another public meeting coming up to discuss that, and Old Mill Park plans. I believe it's August 13th. That's what I heard Todd Brown, the director of Park and Recs, talk about at the last Planning Commission meeting.
Okay.
But yeah, I encourage people to share their thoughts, and even if it's reacting on Facebook, but of course the best thing, just to email the people that that are your leaders and city staff, is another good way to do it. It's important to really get people out there and have a volunteer for things and show what matters to you and your community.
Because in some of these cases, a lot of you don't want to see changes, but it, like you say, in some cases there has to be changes.
That's right. And you know, I think that's the discussion that I know is built in, it's baked into the federal planning process, this thing we called Section 106, but the city does it at a local level as well. You're right, you want to have that dialogue. So for instance, you know, it's very common, I know, to say new is important, and no, we can't change that old building, but to a certain extent, our older buildings have changed all the time, and we still have them. They are capable of being readapted, and that actually saves us all money, and it saves our landfill from being filled with things. Finding a way to reuse the existing built environment and essentially conserve our assets and make the best of it. You know, I think it has a lot of great, wonderful benefits. So you know, these new grandiose plans, I think that's certainly the role and the job of planners and other people to think big and think about what they could make happen. And then there's also the idea that we need to right size. And I think, and it certainly is an investment in resources. Like I said, I can't believe how much like playground equipment costs. When they had to replace that over at Alice Spring after the tree had fallen down at first, when I was like, oh God. Or the pedestrian bridges that go across on the canal path. I know there's like a part for when they need to be worked on. But again, the idea that maintenance is something we're always doing. And if we think long term rather than the short term immediate, I mean, it's ridiculous how much even the trash cans cost these days. So it's important to make smart decisions and decide what is, you know, not go grandiose and too far overboard, because, of course, we have a budget to consider and our taxes that are going up and things that have to be paid for that way. And so I think it's about wise decision making that is, again, leaving a better place for the future neighbors and residents of Fredericksburg.
Well, what's great, Danae, about having somebody like you and Historic Fredericksburg Foundation in town is you make us look at these things and look at, you know, just how you talked about how there might be the cost might be more for a roof, but it's going to last.
Right.
Just because this is all the whole historic fabric that we have here. Once it's gone, it's gone. And
that's
so
right.
I think, you know, you want to be careful.
Yes.
In all the decisions that you make.
That's right. And I think the best part about, again, the historic environment that we have now is that it is existing. It is an asset. The idea that we already have density downtown at a neighborhood scale, at a pedestrian scale.
Yeah.
These things that are worth measuring and assessing. And lots of times I think that is something that we don't stop to pause and really assess. Sometimes we take for granted what we have as opposed to what we could. But we're not always doing a great job at assessing what is current. So actually, HFI has a petition that we created in March that's really highlighting some goals that the City Council has had for preservation and preservation staff have outlined. And they've been lagging. It's been a few years, but we've been looking at doing an economic impact study of historic preservation that actually wants to assess, of course, jobs and local businesses, how much people spend here. The idea, and it's actually been proven, that homes within a historic district or conservation districts actually maintain their value and grow in value more quickly than elsewhere. The same thing for commercial spaces as well. And I know the Park Service had an economic impact study they released last summer that talked about their regional impact. But we really do need to take stock of how much our character and what we have really does contribute to the betterment of our community. So we're advocating for that. The city's tax abatement, a credit or whatever, is also something that's been discussed about expanding. The state law allows it to go much higher to help support people save the existing older, smaller, better is actually what is a report that was titled by the National Trust that looked at smaller historic spaces and how they actually do contribute to bettering our environment. So that's another part of it. And then establishing a preservation advisory committee. That's another goal that's been lagging. So HFI is really out here. Yeah, we're trying to raise these things, and we would love people to come volunteer and help or just join and become a member and support our work. And we just really want you to help us spread the news. That's the biggest part. So thank you.
We're going to take a quick break and come back and wrap this up. And I want to talk about that, of how people can get involved. Because
perfect.
You may live around here and have never even thought about it, but HFFI might be for you. It should be for you in some kind of way. You can get involved, whether it's just volunteering or whatever. We'll talk about that when we come back and we wrap this up with Danae Peckler, preservationist with the Historic Fredericksburg Foundation, hffi.org. We'll wrap it up when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Download the all-new News Talk 1230 WFVA app for Apple and Android. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Wow, I have learned a whole lot this morning from Danae Peckler with Historic Fredericksburg Foundation, preservationist with HFFI. For instance, I never thought about the fact that, you know, you get a lot of startups in Fredericksburg.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought of that whole
thing. No, these older spaces, you know, you keep seeing people that really, these small businesses that will go into these, like I said, the quirky older places. When I lived in Lexington, they had a great bumper sticker that said, "Keep Lexington Funky."
Yeah.
I I love that about Fredericksburg. Keep Fredericksburg funky. You know, that makes us unique. It's the diversity and the character of the space, and it's not generica. That's the word that we actually use in our discipline, that there's this idea that there are certain places that look like everywhere else, and that's certainly right. Something we want to avoid, you know.
Funny you mentioned Lexington, because having spent a lot of time there, one of my kids went to school down there, over there.
Yeah.
And I always thought Lexington in so many ways is like Fredericksburg,
yes.
But you're not having Northern Virginia.
That's right. That's right.
You.
Our development pressures are really ratcheting up, you know, the stakes. And it does make people feel, I think, very, you know, aggravated or just there's tension. There will always be that tension, but it certainly is growing here. And with the price of land, of course, HFI used to have that revolving fund. Actually, it was fundamental, another leading situation. We were one of the first cities to create that. And and actually, Dr. John Wilhite, a former dentist, I've been interviewing him and talking about that. But, you know, we bought places, fixed them up, and then moved on. And that's how we eventually got to the Lewis stores. Well, but it's just the price of land is getting really expensive in order to do that.
Yeah.
So it does take, you know, everyone in the community, of course, to commit to this project or this effort.
One of the ways people can do that is by becoming a member.
That's right.
Donating to HFFI, volunteering, or just getting involved in so many different ways.
Most definitely. You know, we have a couple of committees that are really drawing greater attention, which is wonderful. The Historic Cemetery Consortium was recently founded and is looking to unite people to maintain some of our historic cemeteries, places where some of the relatives are no longer around to be able to maintain. And, of course, we don't think about it, but our cemeteries are nonprofits. There's nobody out there giving them a lot of money to maintain their stuff either. You know, history is wonderful, and it is something that, again, is it's on us to be stewards to maintain, and it really is a communal effort. But we also have a marker report committee, which is really fun. That's one of the ones that gets to my heart, because it's about researching your homes. If you've seen our distinctive markers on houses around or buildings around town, that will tell you when it was built.
Those little ovals,
that's right, with the HF in it for our historic Fredericksburg, and those, each one of those comes with a report that talks about who's lived there and when the building on it was built, and you know, anyway, and the history of the land. And so that's an intensive, great thing that you can really get, anybody can get a start on, just learning about how to research your home. We also have a committee dedicated towards events. Of course, we've got our candlelight tour coming back up this year or this Christmas, and we always need volunteers for a candlelight tour. That is a huge community event, and I know, unfortunately, we couldn't pull it off last year, giving a lot of transitions and changes, but it's coming back this year with a vengeance. We've got, I think, 9 properties that are going to be listed.
Oh, okay.
And so it's going to be a real game changer, but we need all the hands in that we can get. So yes, you can go to hfi.org. There's a volunteer kind of sign up thing there. You could certainly come to the Lewis store. We are open Wednesdays to Saturdays from 12 to 4, but I'm also around pretty regularly and sending an email, and you can make an appointment and come in any other time, and we'd be happy to have anybody who wants to get more involved.
Lewis stores is right across from the library.
That's right, 1200 Caroline Street, and it's a building unique in and of itself.
Yeah.
You certainly come down and take a look at it. We have a lot of people who said, oh, I've just never been in here before. So, you know, and
that's
it really.
That's me. I want to come.
Yeah, please do. I mean, it's, you know, it really does connect us to such, again, these buildings, these older buildings, particularly one like that has been denovated to 1749. It has so many layers of history. It's like an onion. That's what my professors used to tell me. Anyway,
yeah.
But, you know, you can take any angle. It's a choose your own adventure story. So come on down, learn more about our town's history and certainly what you can do to help us save it.
This is what makes it a great place to live.
It does.
And
it does.
You don't want to lose.
No.
You don't want to lose, like you said, the character and what we have here.
Right. And certainly not for buildings that aren't even designed to last more than 20-some-odd years. But that is the places it is. It's the grounding. It's the things that you'll remember, that your kids will remember, that future generations will remember. We get to decide how we want to move forward and what has meaning to us. And so, everybody can be an advocate for their own neighborhood and what matters to them.
Danae, thank you. This has been just great. We are going to do much, much more.
I hope so.
Whether it's videos around town or radio shows talking about this, because history is so important here. And this is an area that we haven't talked enough about, and we will.
Excellent. Sounds good. And you're right. We have so many good things to promote, too. You know, we really have a lot of hardworking, dedicated citizens and, of course, museums and sites and events and everybody. I mean, everybody's working hard. So it's something to celebrate.
HFFI.org. Danae Peckler, preservationist with Historic Fredericksburg Foundation.
Thanks
Danae.
Thank you.
News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA, focused on Fredericksburg.